I'm not mistaken, I think we read through the Perek of Aleph before we started to come to some resolution of our challenges and issues. We decided to read one more Perek and found ourselves bemused by yet another mystery. Correct?
Yes.
So, how many mysteries does that leave us with?
Too many.
Many.
Anybody keeping track of all our questions?
Janet, that's where you come in.
I can't keep track of all of them. I'll just summarize.
Okay, let's summarize. What?
There's a lot of disturbing mysteries in a very disturbing story.
A lot of disturbing mysteries for a very disturbing story. All right, well, let's try to sort this out. So I suggested that today we're going to begin to work our way backwards and sort out some of the answers. Unfortunately, with a story like Pelegish Begiva, there really isn't a way to begin to sort out the answers until you have a picture of the whole story, which is why we kept getting deeper and deeper into the events that took place and found ourselves mystified further and further. Pelegesh was only one part of the story. Then we had found ourselves in this civil war between Binyamin and Israel, which they consulted with God about in the Yom V'tumim, and they ended up losing the battle once and twice, and then finally God said the third time they'll be successful. That in of itself created a mystery. The gathering of all the forces of Israel and the emphasis on the unity of Israel in their attack on Binyamin, and then a couple of psukim later, they're sitting in the Beit HaMikdash crying over the demise of the Shevet that they just wiped out. So then we went to Perek of Aleph, and we found that in the midst of their cry about what they do with Binyamin, they had taken an oath not to marry Binyamin as part of a kind of eradication of the remnant of the Shevet. Then they regretted that, so they found, okay, well, they had another oath that they wouldn't, that anybody didn't come to fight in the battle would be put to death. So they figured, okay, well, they could solve one oath by finding somebody, they could solve the problem of Binyamin by finding a group that never fought in the battle in the first place.
Killed them too.
Went out to the Yavesh Gilad, killed them too. And by the time it's all over, we're trying to figure out what's going on here. So I won't deny the fact that this parasha has mystified the Mefarshim for many, many years and generations, to the point where, for reasons that are in part due to the complexity of the story and in part due to the appropriateness of the material, when Shoftim is taught in the curriculum of elementary school, which is in the upper grades, sixth or seventh grade, they stop at Chimsham. They don't get to Pesel Micha, and they certainly don't get to Pelegesh Begiva. Nonetheless, we have an obligation to try to figure out what's going on. And I will tell you that what I'm going to share with you now is not without its own controversy and complexity. But there is a group of Tanakh scholars in Israel today that are very creative and very text-centered. Many years ago, a number of them got together to kind of try to figure out what they could address, and one of the suggestions put forward is a resolution to the issue of Pelegesh Begiva that I'm going to share with you, begin to share with you this morning, and it'll take us one or two classes to get through it all, but essentially go through this suggested explanation of the parak. It's really an explanation of the whole parasha.
Who's the group?
Midan, Rav Yoh Ben Nun, the chaver out in the gush, you know, the chaver.
I heard
Yoh Ben Nun
speak.
My Tanakh Rebbeim of various contexts. I heard it from Rav Midan. I don't know that Rav Yoh Ben Nun would agree or disagree, but I'm sure it's part of that that approach. So let's go back to Perek of Aleph. That's where we ended up last week. And I'm going to suggest to you that the secret to unraveling the whole mystery relies in one word.
And milk, Israel?
No.
That's three words.
That's not one word, that's three words.
But I'm counting it as one.
Okay. One phrase.
Yeah.
Go back to Perek of Aleph for a second. Beginning of the Perek, Ve'ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah lemor, which, if you remember our conversation last week, we spent a good deal of time trying to figure out how to translate correctly this phrase. The result was, we translated it as, Ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah lemor. Israel? What was the verb tense of this phrase, taken an oath?
Past
perfect, right? Had taken the oath, nishba b'mitzpah lemor. Mitzpeh, don't forget, is the place where the war began. Correct? Back in Perek Chaf, right. They all gathered the forces of Israel in Mitzpeh. Take a look in Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph. Vayetzu kol b'nei Yisrael v'tikahel ha'ida ki ish echad. All of Israel gathered together ki ish echad, like one person. L'midan v'ad b'er sheva v'eretz ha'gilad, north, south, and east. The Gilad, of course, is a reference to the east side of the Yarden. El Hashem HaMitzpah. Gathered to God, meaning to the call of God's call, or God's mission, if you will, in Mitzpah. So the Mitzpah is where this army of 400,000 gathered. Right? Yetzu pinot kol am kol shiftei Yisrael b'kahal am be'elokim arba miot. Excuse me. So they're in Mitzpeh, where the war took place. In Perek of Aleph already, they're not in Mitzpeh anymore. Pasuk Bet, they are back in Beit El, or in Shiloh. Vayavo ha'am Beit El vayeshvu sham. They're back, they're in Shiloh. So if they're in Shiloh in Perek of Aleph, and they were in Mitzpeh in Perek Chaf, then it stands to reason that Pasuk Aleph, V'ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah lemor, Ish Yisrael, Israel had taken an oath in Mitzpah, is a Pasuk that is chronologically not describing events that took place here, but rather describing an oath that took place beforehand. So why is it here?
It's like a summary. Like to say what
it's not a summary as much, just a piece of information. Why is this oath mentioned here and not mentioned earlier?
Because the following text is going to relate to the oath that was taken in Mitzpeh.
Correct. Because what follows is a description, is a discussion about the consequences of this oath. So it's not uncommon for Tanakh to take events that are out of sequence and mention them relevant to where their thematic connection leads us and not necessarily where their chronological context lies. I'm going to repeat that sentence. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon for Tanakh to take verses, events, stories, and put them out of chronological context in order to connect them to a thematic piece of the story.
We've seen that before.
We've seen it before. We've seen it in various places. On a small scale, for example, we saw by Shirat Devorah that Shirat Devorah mentions pieces of the war that aren't mentioned in Perek Dalet, even though the war is in the fourth chapter, but the Shir is in the fifth chapter, and she mentions pieces like, for example, the story of Yael, when Yael kills Sisra. And there's a whole piece to what took place there that in Perek Dalet is just missed, and you have to read the Shir in order to go back and understand it. You had a chance to review that this past Shabbos. There are many other such examples in Tanakh where pieces of a story are moved from one place to another in order to connect them to their theme rather than their historical or chronological context. This is a principle in Chumash, where Rashi quotes and invokes this principle in a number of places, where he talks about Ein Mukdam U'Murchar B'Torah, that there are places in the Torah where events are out of sequence. Now, Rashi takes that sometimes to an extreme. He'll take whole episodes and move them, like the rebellion of Korach, which he moves to chronologically a much earlier period of time, and is listed in Sefer Bamidbar because it's listed as part of a series of rebellions. After you have Chet Meraglim, so then you have the story of Korach and the story of, right? There's a whole series of rebellions. It's kind of like this Megillah or listing of all of the rebellions of Israel one after the other. Even though, says Rashi, the story of Korach, according to Rashi's understanding, is a rebellion that took place much earlier, after Matan Torah. Other Mefarshim are less willing to move whole stories so quickly, but you cannot deny that there are places in the Torah where there are events that are out of sequence. And they're moved out of sequence or referenced out of sequence because they're relevant to the information at hand. I'll show you two examples in Chumash, and then we'll come back to Pilegesh Begiva. Two very powerful examples. One is really quite undeniable because the dates are given. It's the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Of Sefer Bamidbar. So right at the beginning we have Bamidbar opens with the census, correct? Mm-hmm. Bamidbar opens with the census. What's the date? Vayedaber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai ba'ol moed be'echad lachodesh hasheni. What's the date?
First
day
of the second month.
First day of the second month, the first of
second year.
Is it Iyar?
Iyar. Bashana hashenit l'tzeita me'eretz Mitzrayim lemor. Second year from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So, just to make sure we understand. Bamidbar, Perek Aleph, taking place on Aleph, year 2. Okay, or one of month 2, year 2. In Chumash, in Tanakh, there are no names of dates. It's all, months are numbered, not named. And that's when the census takes place. Now take a look at Bamidbar. Bamidbar. Take a look in Perek Yud. Is it Yud? No, sorry. Perek Tet. We'll get to Perek Yud in a second.
Page 170.
Perek Tet,
correct?
Perek Tet. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shana hashenit l'tzeita me'eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem spoke to Moshe b'midbar Sinai on the second year. B'chodesh harishon lemor. First month, saying. What's the first month? And what day of the first month? First of all, the first month is Nisan. And what day in the first month? Doesn't say, but it says Bachodesh. Bachodesh is usually a reference to Rosh Chodesh. So that's usually a reference to the first of the month. First of the month of Nisan. The month of Nisan is the first month. So whatever is happening here, God is speaking to Moshe in the first month of the first day of the first month of the second year. Bashana Shenit. So which took place first? Chapter 9 or chapter 1?
Chapter 9.
Chapter 9, clearly.
Logically.
right? Yes. Clearly. Chapter 9 begins in the first month, first of the second year. Chapter 1 begins in the second month of the second year. That's undeniable, right?
Right.
So why is it out of order? And the answer is content or context. Chapter 1 is dealing with the census. That's the theme of Sefer Bamidbar. We are in the second month. This is our chronological context. We are in the second month, the second year. We are headed to Mitzrayim. From Mitzrayim to Bnei Israel. From Har Sinai to Israel. We're headed from Har Sinai to Israel. We are on a trajectory. I'll come back to this in a second, Perek Tet. Now look at Bamidbar, Perek Yud, chapter 10. Starting with verse 11.
171.
Right, starting with verse 11. Vayhi bashana hashanit, b'chodesh hasheni, be'esrim b'chodesh, na'ala ha'anan me'al mishkan ha'idut. So what happens in Perek Yud? We are in the 20th of Iyar, year 2, and na'ala ha'anan. Na'ala ha'anan means that the cloud rose up in order to begin their journey. This is the beginning of the journey. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael l'masehem. It's the first time the camp of Israel, in all of its new formation, begins to march forward to the land of Israel. So chapter 1 sets out the formation of the camp. Chapter 2, 3, 4, it's all about the formation and the structure of the camp of Israel. Mm-hmm. Chapter 10, we are actually traveling from the first of year to the 20th of year. We're traveling, so all of this is in sequence. Agreed?
Yeah.
So why do I have this blip in the middle of chapter 9, which was back to the first of the year, a month earlier?
Nisan.
Explain something.
Right? A month earlier, back in Nisan. So the answer is, if you go back to that parak, chapter 9, and we read what's going on, you'll see the answer right away. You see the answer right away. To make the Pesach offering, but we're a month past Pesach, right? Pesach's in Nisan. So
this Pesach
Sheni. Perek Tet starts. B'chodesh HaRishon Lemor, we're in Pasuk Aleph, the end of Pasuk Aleph, we're in back in Chodesh Nisan. V'yasu b'nei Yisrael at Pasach b'moado. Israel kept Pesach in its proper time. When is Pesach? The 15th of Nisan. Be'arba'asar yom l'chodesh hazeh ben harbaim tasu oto b'moado. Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year, it's their first Pesach post Mitzrayim.
Right.
Hashem says to Moshe, okay, listen, a year ago, it's our anniversary, first anniversary of Yitzhiat Mitzrayim, it's time for Pesach. And Moshe said to B'nai, Pasuk Dalet, v'yadaber Moshe al B'nai Yisrael l'asot ha-Pasach. They kept that Pesach in the first month, 14th of the month. That's when they kept Pesach, when they brought the Korban Pesach, according to all the laws that Hashem had commanded them. So, Pasuk Aleph through Pasuk He is a month earlier, correct? Vayihi anashim asher ayu tumeim lenefesh adam, v'lo yochlu lasot haPesach b'yom ahu. There were certain people who were tamei, and they couldn't bring the Pesach. So vayikrevu lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Aaron b'yom ahu. They came to Moshe and Aaron, and they complained. We are sitting here in the first anniversary of Pesach, and we are excluded from being able to bring the korban. V'yemru anashim ma'im me'elav anachnu tmeim lenefesh adam. Lama nigara levilti akriv et korban Hashem v'moado b'toch b'nei Yisrael. We are Tmeimet, we shouldn't be excluded from Korban Pesach, the anniversary of Chayisah. Vayomer alehem Moshe, imdu v'eshma ma'itzaveh Hashem lachem. Let me hear what God has to answer. That's all about happening in the month of Nisan. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe lemor, daber b'nei Yisrael lemor, ish ish kiyet tamei lenefesh obaderech l'chaka lachem oledorotechem v'asa Pesach l'Hashem. Any person who is in this category of either too far or tamemet, b'chodesh hasheni b'arba'as hayom ben arba'im yasu oto. So he has an option. We'll create a moed bet. We'll create a makeup test. We'll create an opportunity to make up the Korban Pesach a month later. It's called Pesach Sheni. Mm-hmm. The Pesach Sheni will take place on the 14th of
Iyar.
Now, there's no Pesach. There's no Chag HaMatzot associated with Pesach Sheni. There's no seven-day Chag. It's just a one-day opportunity to bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Adar. Of Iyar.
So they don't have a Seder or anything like
There's
that?
There's no Seder. Well, they have the Seder because they have the Pesach. They have the Korban Pesach. And they have Matzah and Maror, but there's no Issa Chametz. And there's no Seven Dechag. So there's a famous Gemara that says that Pesach Sheni, you had Chametz and Matzah bir buvya, right? You had Korban Pesach and Matzah and the Chametz is everywhere because there's no Issa Chametz. There's no Chag of 7 days. It's just the Korban Pesach with all of its trappings that go with it. So all of this is here for Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is the 14th of Iyar.
That'd
right?
be a lot easier.
Yeah, it would be a lot easier. That is true.
Not a bad thing.
Right? So here's the sequence. First of Iyar, we have the formation of the camp. On the 20th of Iyar, we're going to start to travel. On the 14th of Iyar... This is all Iyar. We're going to have Pesach Sheni. But we don't know anything about Pesach Sheni. So in order for us to understand Pesach Sheni, the Torah first takes us back to the story of the first Pesach in Mitzrayim, in the Midbar. When Bnei Yisrael came, and they were Tameh, and they didn't know what to do. So they asked, and were told, we'll create a Mo'adba, we'll create a separate Chag. So all of this parak, the first eight psukim of this parak is there to tell us the background to the celebration of Pesach Sheni. That chapter is out of sequence, but because it's connected to Pesach Sheni, that story was taken out of its chronological context of the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar and moved to where it had a thematic link. So I can look at it as an isolated story. Here's the first Pesach in the Midbar. Mm-hmm. And I can ignore the context chronologically for a moment, just understand what it was, who are these people, and what do they represent, and why. So I can analyze the story by itself. Then I can take that story and put it into the broader context of the chronological sequence. I'll show you another much smaller example, but nonetheless one that is very interesting because we just read it in last week's parasha. Parashat B'Shalach. This one is easy to see because it's glaring. You can't deny that these psukim are chronologically out of sequence. You can argue, for example, with the story of the rebellion of Korach, whether it is or it isn't out of sequence. The dispute amongst the Mefarshim. This is undeniable. You can't assume, right? You can't read the Pesukim otherwise because it gives you the text. I'm going to go to the story of the man. The story of the man is in chapter 16, Perek Tetzayin. After the whole episode of the man. The whole episode of the man falls. They go out, they collect, and they get the laws of Shabbat as it pertains to the man. Moshe tells Aaron to take a jar of the man and put it somewhere as a special mishmeret for generations to come. And look at Pasuk Lamed Hey. End of the parak. Pasuk Lamed Hey.
83.
ובני ישראל אכלו את המן 40 שנה עד בואם אל ארץ נושבת את המן אכלו עד בואם אל קצה ארץ כנען. בני ישראל ate the man for 40 years until they came to the land of their inheritance where they would settle. The man they ate until they came to the edge of ארץ כנען. Simple verse. And I have a simple question. When was this verse written?
Midbar?
Excuse me?
When they get
here's an entire parak about the man. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, overall, we have a debate in the Gemara as to when the actual Sefer, the text of the Torah, was written. There's two opinions. One says it was written as each event occurred, and the other opinion says it was written in its entirety only at the end of the 40 years before Moshe died. Leaving that opinion aside, working off the opinion that says that it was written as each event occurred, that parsha was written down.
It should have been much later.
What's the problem with this verse?
It's forecasting an event.
You say they ate it the month for 40 years, so you're only in year one.
They're in year one, and not only are they in year one, it's worse than that.
They haven't even gotten to Sinai yet.
They haven't gotten to Sinai yet. They're just out of Mitzrayim, and it's even worse than that.
They haven't started eating the man yet?
No, they're eating the man now.
Oh, okay. Adbom Shalaharis or something?
No, this reference to 40 years is really enormously problematic.
Yeah, because they don't know they're going to be 40 years.
We are before Chet HaMeraglim.
Right. How do they know it's going to take 40 years?
There was no 40 years. They were supposed to go to High Sinai, get the Torah, and 11 days later, they're in the land of Israel.
Good thing they weren't reading those.
That's exactly the issue, right? So this notion, it's a myth that they were given the whole Torah at High Sinai, right? It's a myth. They were given the halachas of the Torah at High Sinai, but they weren't given the text of the Torah. Couldn't have been. So the Gemara has two opinions. One is the whole Torah was written at the end of the 40 years, and the other is that each parsha was written by itself. But even if each parsha is written by itself, there's no question that there are verses that are relevant only later, and that are inserted earlier. So why is this verse here if they haven't had Chet HaMeraglim yet? When we read Parsha Beshalach, we don't stop and think, well, how could they talk about 40 years when the Chet HaMeraglim hasn't happened yet? We should. Right? We should. And in fact, Rashi on this makes the point that this pasuk is foreshadowing an event of the future. But it's not really foreshadowing. It's hindsight. It's written after the fact,
and
put here. Because of the context, right? Your story about the man, so you finish the story of the man.
I think this would be in Devarim.
Right? This should be in Devarim, or at least somewhere later. Right? But there it would be an isolated pasuk. It wouldn't have any meaning. So the theme here is the story of the man. In hindsight, the completion of the story of the man includes a reference to the 40 years. That's not an uncommon phenomenon.
Couldn't it have said that they ate the man until they got to the land of Israel, then you wouldn't have the same issue?
But it doesn't. It says they ate it for 40 years. It wants us to understand.
We're going
to
rewrite it.
Right? No, we're about to do that with Shofton.
That could use a rewrite. Major.
All right. And there are many such examples in Chumash and in Navi. There's a very famous another famous example in Navi with Shaul and David HaMelech. If you remember, who studied Shmuel once before?
A long time ago.
There's an irony in the story of Shaul because Shaul meets David HaMelech, and David is his. This one has a somewhat different resolution. It's a little bit different, but you don't have to go there. I just want to get the chapters right. In chapter... Back in chapter 16, Shaul meets David. David becomes his utensil bearer. He carries like Nosea Kilim. He becomes his assistant to the king. He sings for him. He plays for him. He holds the vessels. He sings for him. He plays for him. Right. He becomes very close to Shaul. He goes out and he fights his wars for him. That's in chapter 16. Shmuel comes to David and appoints him. Vayavod David el Shaul vayamod lefanav. David comes to Shaul. He stands before them. Before him, vayaveyu meod. Shaul loves him. Vayilo nase kelim. He carries his vessel, his utensils for him. He's his assistant. And vayishlach Shaul el Yishai lemo yamodna David lefanai ki matzachem b'inai. Shaul sends a message to David's father Shaul at Yishai. That this David, he should stay with me. I love him. He finds favor in my eyes. Whenever I am in need, he plays his kinor for me. Right? This is chapter 16. Chapter 17 is the story of Goliath. Now, in the story of Goliath, David is sent by Yishai, his father, as a young boy, to go and find... To attend to his brothers. He comes there, he sees everybody waiting for this war with Goliath, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to fight him. So David says, I'll fight him. And there we find the pasuk, which is a remarkable pasuk, where anyway, the context in that parak is that it's the first time David and Shaul meet. I'm looking for a particular pasuk when Shaul turns to his assistant and he says, "Ben Mize Hanar." Who is this child? Who is this kid? About David. Now that's chapter 17. On the heels of chapter 16, which talked about how Shaul loved him, and he wrote to his father, and he said, can he stay with me, and he needed him to play my kinor, etc. You read these two parakim back to back, and they make no sense. And the Mefarshim point this out. And the answer is that they're out of sequence. Clearly, the stories of David and Goliath took place earlier than the stories in chapter 16, and they're like this, they overlap. But one is dealing with one subject and the other is dealing with the other subject. So it's not uncommon in Tanakh to move topics from their chronological context, from their place of occurrence, to a different context which would be connected by theme and not by events. Now, if you buy all this, okay, if you buy all of this, which I think heretofore should be fairly straightforward, okay, then we're going to go back to Shoftim. And I'm going to suggest to you that just as this first verse of Mitzpeh and the oath is out of context,
321.
Yeah, just as this verse about the oath is out of context, I'm going to suggest to you that the rest of this parak is made up of multiple events that are merged together into one chapter, but actually happened
different
times.
Wow.
Okay? Wow. Specifically, right? And we're going to complicate it, but we're going to sort it out. Specifically, anything related to that oath that took place earlier, the rest of the consequences of that oath would also have taken place earlier. Wow. What do I mean by that? So, what I'm going to suggest, if we read this story, read this parak again, we're going to read it now, we're going to read it through, but this time with a discerning eye to the events of, remember, what part of this chapter, forget chapter 20 for a second, what part of chapter 21 was illogical to us? What part of chapter 21 made no sense when we read it the first time?
That after they kill Benjamin, they have, yeah, Harata.
After they kill Benjamin, they have Harata, and then? that's by and of itself not so terrible, right? Everybody's calmed down. The war is over. The tensions have lowered. And now they realize what they've done. They have charata. That's not...
No, and they killed the other group, and right. then they realized they didn't have enough
Yavesh Gilad. The war with Yavesh Gilad, right? Here they are sitting there moaning the destruction of Binyamin. They don't know what to do, and they can't marry Binyamin. They say, okay, well, let's figure out who didn't come to war, and we'll go and kill them, and then we'll have survivors. The war with Yavesh Gilad is completely illogical, correct? So here's what we're going to do.
Especially that
earlier? When they didn't
part
show
of
Menashe
up. Did come. But here's what we're going to do.
They could have been
I'm
going to
take the story in chapter 21. We're going to reread it. And as we read it, verse by verse, I'm going to divide it into two subjects. Those subjects are Milchemet Yavesh Gilad, the war with Yavesh Gilad, and the other subject would be
marrying starting Binyamin anew.
The rehabilitation, which I can spell in Hebrew far easier than I can spell it in English.
Shevet
Binyamin.
Oh, is that Shikum or
Shikum?
Shikum.
Shikum. My Hebrew spelling is a lot better than English spelling. I wouldn't even attempt to spell rehabilitation on the board.
That's very good sound.
The handwriting wouldn't allow for it. All right. So we're going to read the parak. Bear in mind that there are two stories here. And what our goal now is, as we read through it, is to separate them. Okay? So I'm going to read through the parak again. It's literally sentence by sentence. You need to tell me which side of this board this sentence belongs on. You follow what's going on? Okay, I'm going to actually do it this way. I'm going to stand up, you're going to read it through, literally, pasuk by pasuk, and you're going to tell me where this story belongs. Ve'ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah lemor ish mimenu lo yiten bito lebinyamin le'isha. Israel took an oath, nobody's allowed to marry the daughters of Binyamin. Logically, would that have taken place after the war with Binyamin or before the war with Binyamin? Let me ask the question that way.
Before.
Logically.
After. Makes sense that after they've decimated Binyamin and they're in the Beit HaMikdash crying over the destruction of a Shevet, they're going to take an oath that they're never going to allow the children to marry the remnants of that Shevet. Does that make sense?
No.
Remember, the Mishkan is in Beit El, or Shiloh. Mitzpeh is the place of the starting point of the war.
Yeah.
If their oath about Binyamin is taking place in Mitzpeh, it's taking place
at the beginning,
earlier. So let's put Pasuk Aleph here. Where it goes into the context here, we'll see in a few minutes, but let's put it here. It's early. Ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah. Let's call it the Shvu'ah b'mitzpah over Binot. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
They come to Beit El, they're crying, they raise their voices in tears. Why, God of Israel, has you allowed this? Has this happened? That an entire Shevet should be destroyed. Which Shevet are we talking about?
Binyamin.
So when is this taking place?
After.
Okay.
That. Gimel. Vayhi mimacharat v'yashkimu ha'am v'yivnu shem mizbeach v'yilu olot u'shlamim. Sacrifices, offerings. Tshuva. Dalet. All part of this rehabilitation of Binyamin. Now, remember I told you to pay close attention to the paragraph breaks.
Yeah.
Okay? They're in the middle of the Beit HaMikdash, and they're crying over the destruction of Binyamin, and there's a paragraph break. Vayomru, Vayomru b'nei Yisrael, Mi asher lo ala b'kahal mikol shiftei Yisrael al Hashem, Who is it for any tribe of Israel who has not come to this to God? Ki hashvua gdolaita l'asher lo ala l'ashem ha-mitzvah lemor mot yumat. Great oath. Anyone who has not come to mitzvah shall be put to death.
That was the beginning.
Yeah, be before.
But actually, in some ways, this verse gets split. It depends on how you look at it. You could split the verse. Mm-hmm. You could argue that the first part of this verse is here in Shiloh talking about, well, the beginning of the solution. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe there wasn't a group that wasn't part of the oath. But the second half of this verse is clearly a reference back to an oath. When did this oath take place?
Before
the war. How do I know it took place before the war?
This is a mitzvah.
It's a reference to mitzvah. So let's put Pasuk Hey over here. Whether it's entirety or only half of it, it doesn't matter to me right now. Let's put Pasuk Hey over here, and that's another Shvuah.
Mm-hmm.
That Shvuah is what?
You put to death anybody.
Kill anybody.
So didn't
right?
Participate in the war.
Asher lo Allah mot yuma. So now I have two oaths, both taking place in
Mitzpeh.
Where we put these oaths, we shall see. Because now we have to sort out the whole story. And eventually, after we figure out Parakaf, Aleph, we're going to have to go back and figure out Parakaf. And put these pieces of the story back in their proper place.
We knew we'd get done.
What was that?
Alan says we're never going to get done. We're going
to
be in
Shavuot. Oh, yeah, we're going to be in Shavuot. We're going to be done. This is about the Shem before Pesach.
Before Pesach. Which year?
The second year since Yitzhak. Vayinachamu. Now, Pasuk Vav. Vayinachamu b'nei Yisrael al Binyamin achiv. Israel regretted the destruction of Binyamin. Where are we?
Shikom.
Back here. Vav. Vayamru nigdah hayom shevet echad miYisrael, an entire shevet has been destroyed today. Ma na'aseh lehem lenotrim lenashim? How are we going to provide wives for them? After we took such a devastating oath, nishbanu, past tense, past perfect tense, we had taken this oath not to give our daughters to them as wives. Pasuk chet, vayomru, mi echad mishiftei Yisrael shelo el Hashem mitzvah? Is there any amongst us who has not come to mitzvah to wage this war? They took a census. V'hine lo ba ish el ha-machane mi'yavesh Gilad el ha-kahal. And behold, nobody mi'yavesh Gilad had to come to that gathering. V'yitpaked ha'am. They took a census. V'hine ein shem ish mi'yoshvei yavesh Gilad. There was nobody there from yavesh Gilad. V'yishlechu sham ha'eda 12,000 ish mi'pnei ha-chayel. So they took 12,000 soldiers out of the war, out of the army. They commanded them and instructed them, saying, "Luchu v'kitem et yoshvei yavesh gilad lefi cherev anashim v'yataf." Go and wipe out yavesh gilad, men, women, and child. Any male, any woman who's married to a male, anybody, just wipe them all out. As for the women that are not married, bring them back as spoils. Alright, leave Pasuk Bet out of the picture for a second. Pasuk Chet 2 Yud Aleph is what? Chet to Yud Aleph?
No,
do that again. Do that again. Start with Pasuk Chet. Mi achad mishivtei Yisrael ashelo ala al Hashem hamitzpah. We're back to mitzpah. Any reference to mitzpah is back in Perek, is back in the war. Any reference to Shiloh is here in Shikum, is in Perek of Aleph. That's exactly what's going on. You've got a merger of two places in this Perek. You've got all the references to what took place in Mitzpeh, which was part of the war, And all the references, what's taking place in Shiloh, which is part of the rehabilitation and the crying and the remorse. This campaign, the oath, this is Pasuk Chet again repeats that same oath. So first we read the same beginning of the Pasuk. It's exactly the same phrase as in Pasuk Hey.
So that goes to Yud Aleph, in other words.
And that goes through Yud Aleph. Through Yud Aleph is what? Give me a title.
Milchemet
Yavesh Gilad.
But they wouldn't have even been thinking about it if they weren't thinking about Shikum Benjamin.
Because they're not, these stories are not happening here. Yavesh Gilad was here. Yeah. That's my point.
Yeah.
Yavesh Gilad is a previous story. It took place in the previous chapter. It's part of the previous events of the war, where we'll figure out.
Wow.
It's got nothing to do with the Shikum of Benjamin.
Except for the...
The fact that it's only relevant now because of Pasuk Yibet. Yeah. What happens with Pasuk Yibet? They go back and they take the survivors and they say, oh, you know what? In the end, Yetzatov. Because I have survivors, Miyavesh Gilad, who weren't part of that oath, and I bring the Na'arot for Shikum of
Benjamin.
And I have a separate problem. It's only 400, and I have 600 here.
Yeah, right,
so for that,
right.
I have to add 200 from Shiloh. Fine. Right. That's the rest of the parak. From Yud Gimel to the end.
That puts a whole new spin on the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because
they already did that terrible thing. They had no idea.
This is all past.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is now. So now let's now I'm going to reread the parak with you.
Whoa.
We're going to do something very simple.
Boy, oh boy. That changes things.
Doesn't want to make sense.
That changes things, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Okay, what did I do here? Okay. Now now I give you this. Right now you got one sheet. I'll give you the other one in a second.
Do we have another one?
Yeah. No, this one you haven't gotten. This one you haven't gotten.
No, we need another one.
Just,
one
they're coming one. Around. They're coming around.
Okay.
They are coming around. Now, on the right-hand side is Perikof Aleph as we read it in sequence. Mm-hmm. And what I've done in the red, it was completely unintentional.
Oh, really?
The choice of color was completely unintentional. But the red is the bloodbath. You'll forgive the unintentional color scheme. And the black is the shikum. So what you have... What we just did here, by splitting them, as we read it through linearly, is what you have on the right-hand side of the page. Okay? Now, on the left-hand side of the page, is I took out the beauty of computers. I took out each of these two stories independently. Now, if we read them independently, each story stands by itself. So the top is a collection of psukim Aleph, Hey, and Chet Yud Aleph. Oath, never give our children to Binyamin. Great Shavuot, great oath. Anybody doesn't come to this battle, will be put to death. Nobody came from Givesh Gilad. So they took a census. There's nobody there from Yavesh Gilad. So there's an entire army there, 400,000 soldiers. They took 12,000 of them and sent them to Yavesh Gilad.
ויצבו אותם למור, לכו וכיתם את יושבי יבש גלעד לפי חרב, אנשים ויתף, go wipe them out, men, women, child. וזה הדבר אשר תעשו כל זכר וכל אישה יודעת, משכב זכר, תחנימו. The formula we'll talk about another time. By and of itself, that perek, those psukim, in tone, tenor, and context, would fit where? In the theme of Pelegish Begiva. Chapter 19 is the events that took place in Givah. Chapter 20 is the war with Binyamin, starting in Mitzpeh with the 400,000 soldiers against the 25,000 soldiers. Chapter 21 is the rehabilitation of Binyamin. Into which perek does this story fit?
The war with Binyamin.
War with Binyamin. Right. Where in the war with Binyamin, we'll have to see. But they're still in Mitzpeh. All of that's the Ish Yisrael Nishba. All of that is past tense. It's not just the event of the Shavuot. It's the whole sequence related to the consequences of all the oaths that they took place in the heat of battle.
So are you saying now that they wiped out Yibash Gilad before they take on Binyamin?
That I haven't said yet.
Okay.
That I haven't said yet. That I don't know where to put it in Perichav. Okay. But I definitely know that I can't stick it at the Perichav Aleph because it makes no sense whatsoever. Now, go back to the second part of this parak, which is now in Parakhav Aleph, they come to the rehabilitation. They're sitting in Beit El, which is the Mishkan, and they're bringing sacrifices, and they're crying. They said, why did this happen? An entire Shevet wiped out. They're building sacrifices. They built an altar. They bring. They had remorse and regret over their brother Binyamin. Why should an entire Shevet be wiped out? What are we going to do to the remainder? How do we find them wives? After we took such an oath, fill in the rest of the story. Comes up with a solution. Were 400 survivors of Yavesh Gilad that were brought as a kind of tribute or a bizav of the war, of spoils of war, and that were brought to Shiloh. So, now we have a solution. Called out to the people of Binyamin with an offering of peace. We have wives for you. Vayashu Binyamin be'et ahi v'etnu lehem nanashim ashechiyu min ashei yavesh gilad. But v'lanim tzumem ken, there weren't enough. So then they had the solution of Shiloh. And from Pasuk Bet to the end, with the exception of what's in red, is the story of the rehabilitation of Shiloh. Rehabilitation of Binyamin. And it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. It's a way of finding some way of salvaging what had become a very bloody, disturbing episode in chapter 20.
Too traumatized.
But you understand that if you take the story of Yavesh Gilad and you put it into the middle of the events in the rehabilitation chapter in Perichav Aleph, it makes no sense at all. And that's when we read it linearly, we're like, what's going on here? Take the story and take it out of the chapter, put it back where it belongs, which is in Mitzpeh, and Perichav Aleph now makes more sense. Now the question that we have to ask is, when in chapter 20 did that story take place? That's harder. Right, the war of Yavesh Gilad. That's harder. As well as the oath. Because the context of that oath about marriage was not in the story of chapter 20 either. Which those two pieces of the story, the marriage and Yavesh Gilad, are not in chapter 20. Why are they not in chapter 20? Because they're not relevant to the theme of chapter 20. The theme of chapter 20 is the war with
Binyamin.
I detract from that story with a distraction of other wars if I just tell the story straight. But there's no question that that oath about marriage and the war with Yavesh Gilad is
earlier.
Is part of that story. It's mentioned in chapter 21 because they're both relevant pieces of information that I need for the story of the rehabilitation of Binyamin. So thematically, they're inserted into chapter 21, but they are contextually part of the story of chapter 20. The question now is, where? So, to do that, let's go back to chapter 20. Now, chapter 20 was a long chapter. Well, let's go back to the beginning of it.
319.
And remember, at the time when we read this through, I said, pay careful attention to paragraph breaks. Because sometimes they're logical and sometimes they are not. Starting from the beginning of the chapter. ויצאו בני ישראל ותקהל העדה כי איש אחד למדן ויד בר שבע וארץ הגלעד. Everybody's gathered together. אל השם המצפה. So all these references to coming to it. Do Hashem in Mitzpah. You see it here, right? Mm-hmm. They saw their campaign starting in Mitzpah as a campaign for God. So the call was a call for God and country, if you will. The unity is a major theme in this beginning of this chapter. We talked about that. We saw it. Midan v'ad Beersheva is an expression that we find throughout Tanakh, from Dan to Beersheva, north to south. Ve'eretz ha-Gilad, including the east. The Gilad is the whole area of the east. Ve'yitzvu pinot kol ha'am, kol shiftei Yisrael, b'kahal am Elokim, 400,000 ish ragli shelef charev, 400,000. All the tribes, everybody's there. It's this most enormous gathering of the tribes of Israel since the days of Yeshua. Everybody in one place. Ve'yishmu b'nei Binyamin ki alu. Binyamin heard that this army had gathered. It's not hard to hear when an army of 400,000 gathers at your footsteps. Now they begin to investigate. And that we talked about, the whole investigation of what took place in the city of Givah. How did we get to this? Where? What? Why did we get this very strange parcel post package in the mail? So the Isha Levi tells them the story. I'm going to skip the story for now because we've read it too many times for my comfort zone. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayasef Kol Ish Yisrael El Ha'ir Ke Ish Echad Chaverim.
And then there's another break.
One second. May Yakum call Amgisha Khalimala and Alech Isha. Right, started actually in Pasuk Tet, they talk about going to war with Binyamin. Zeh Adavar Hashem Asela Giv'ah Alea Bakoral. It's time to go to war with Giv'ah. Right? The first reference to war is against the city of Giv'ah, not against Binyamin. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The first reference to war is not against Binyamin. They have no gripe with Binyamin. Their gripe is with Giv'ah. Not me.
It's not me. My
it's coming from your purse, I think.
Me? That is the funniest thing, because, oh my God, what is that?
I don't know what that noise is.
I don't know.
Can we an alarm
clock? I'm sorry, Rabbi.
That's okay.
What is that?
Nothing.
Oh, my miscall.
It's okay. So in Pasuk Tet, they're ready to go to war against Giv'ah. Velakachnu asara anashim Pasuk Yud, Pasuk 10. Velakachnu asara anashim lemeah. Ulechol shivtei Yisrael lemeah le'elef. They gather the whole war together to go to war against whom? Levo'am legeva Binyamin. To against Giv'ah. That's how the army begins. That's their focus. That's their intent. Ve'yasef kol ish Yisrael la'ir ke'ish echad chaverim. Against the city, not against the tribe. Then they begin to negotiate.
Now, they're not going to just start with a war. So they start with negotiations. So they send messengers to the people of Binyamin. What's the simplest resolution of this problem for them?
Turn over
the perpetrators. Here's the lynch mob, 400,000 people. You give us the perpetrators,
and we're done.
What kind of a terrible thing have you done? Give us the people of Bnei Belial. We will put them to... They're evil people. Look what they did to this poor girl. They deserve to be put to death. Nivarara Am Yisrael. Get rid of this evil in Israel. Burn it out. V'lo avu Bnei Binyamin lishmo b'kol achahem Bnei Yisrael. But they refused to listen to their brethren Bnei Yisrael. And they refused to hand over the perpetrators. For whatever reason, it's our issue, stay out of it, so we're independent, we have our own courts, what do we need you for? Stay out of our lives. Right. Now, this army isn't going away, right? Vayasvu b'nei binyamin min harim agivata. So b'nei binyamin gather their forces from Giv'ah to defend the people of Giv'ah. Latzet lemilchama b'nei Yisrael, to go to war against b'nei Yisrael. Vayitpakdu b'nei binyamin b'yom ahu, me'arim 26,000 ish shalef charev, 26,100 soldiers from Binyamin. Levad miyashviyashiv agiv'ah yitpakdu 700 ish b'chor, another 700 young soldiers from the Giv'ah. 700 ish b'chor yiter yad yimino, right, left-handed soldiers. Soldiers able to hit a hare with a stone and not miss. Organized army, capable marksmen, a force to contend with. Ve'ish Yisrael yitpaktu levan mebinyamin 400,000 ish sholef charev, kol ze ish milchama. Israel is a force of 400,000. All there ready to campaign, ready to pounce. So 400,000 against 26,000. Sitting in Mitzpeh. What happens next is astounding. Astounding. Ve'yakumu v'yalu Beit El. They go to Beit El. Well, how did they get from Mitzpeh to Beit El? Or to Shiloh? What, these 400,000 people just suddenly stopped? And they just suddenly said, oh, you know what, maybe we should consult with the Urim V'Tumim first. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Wouldn't that be a good idea? Like, here's the army of Binyamin, here's the army of Binyamin. So 400,000, give it. Wait a minute. Forgot about the Urim V'Tumim. Let's take a detour, 20 miles north. Whether they all go, whether the representatives go, they ask God, Mi'alenu Batchila. God says we should go first. He says Yehuda should go first. They start the campaign. Fine. Vayetzu ish Yisrael l'melchama b'Binyamin. What's going on here? So here's a theory. Theory is that they gathered all these people together. They made a threat to Binyamin. Give us your perpetrators of Givah, and we'll leave you alone. And Binyamin said, no, we're not calling your bluff. We're not giving in to you. We'll call your bluff. So they gather their army. And their army is a little different from the army of Israel. The army of Israel is made up of 400,000 soldiers. From 10 different tribes, from north to south to Dan, to the different, speak different languages, different dialects, different uniforms. It's a lynch mob. The army of Binyamin is 26,100. That's a much more precise number, by the way, which means that it's a much more organized number. 700 from Giv'ah. 700 sharpshooters, marksmen,
That don't miss.
Really capable soldiers. And at that moment, Binyamin says to Ish Yisrael, try me. You are the united forces of Israel. What's your next move? What's your next move? Think about it for a second. 400,000, 26,000. 26,000 of the most ardent, strong, unified forces with motive. 400,000 rag team.
Seal six.
You're you need leverage, right?
But not 400,000.
You need leverage. So what's your first thing you do next?
Consult with Hashem.
Long before that. Oh. We are way before they even get to the wisdom of consulting with Hashem. Because remember, when they consult with Hashem, Hashem, right? Before you, if you call you blessed, you start a war. The first thing you do is you raise the stakes. How do you raise the stakes? Binyamin, you really don't want to do this. You really don't want to do this. If you do this, you know what's going to happen? You're 400,000 soldiers ready for war. If you do this, you know what's going to happen?
Going to be wiped out.
Okay, before we get to wipe, we don't want the war, right? Binyamin says, we're not giving over Givah. We say, we don't want the war. Binyamin, give us the people of Givah, or else what? What's the next piece in their arsenal? The next piece in their arsenal is not the war. The next piece in their arsenal is... They're being protected by Binyamin. So what's your next up piece in the arsenal?
Get Hashem on your side.
Oh, come on. Put this into modern political context. Put this into modern geopolitical issues.
Sanctions.
The next piece in your arsenal is sanctions. Right? So what do you say to Binyamin? If you don't give us the people of Binyamin, of Givah,
our sons won't marry your
daughters. We will never allow our sons to marry your daughters ever again. You will be excommunicated. You will be isolated. You will be a persona non grata in the political halls of Israel. In Mitzpah, they haven't started the war yet. They took an oath against Binyamin. We will never let you... What kind of a stupid oath is that? It's an oath meant to threaten. That's what it's meant for. They never expected them to take them up on it.
But look what happened.
And you know what Binyamin did?
He said,
they gathered their forces even further. They said, nothing doing. We're not giving you other people of Binyamin.
Sanctions don't work.
Sanctions don't work. So what's the next piece in the arsenal when sanctions don't work? Binyamin, we will use every, what's the term? All means at our disposal. All means at our disposal. You don't know what you're fighting against. You know what you're fighting against? You're fighting the entire, total, combined forces of Israel. Wow. You know what that means? International alliance. International coalition. United Nations. We've got it all. There's not a single group unaccounted for here. I'll prove it to you, Binyamin. Census time. Reuven, here. Shimon, here. Levi, here. Yehuda, here. Go through the list. Menasha, each flag has a subtribe.
Right here.
Right? Right? Menasha West, here. Menasha East?
Not here.
Uh-oh, no answer.
Right. The coalition's cracked. So you know what they do? They take another oath. Binyamin, there is not a tribe of Israel that's not going to answer this call. If they do, we'll put them to death. We've got force behind us. We'll use it. They took a census, and who didn't show up? Yavesh Gilad. Now, you're the tribes of Israel. You're 12 tribes. You've got all the 400,000 soldiers, and you are ready for war. The blood is dripping from your mouths. You're just ready, heated up, ready to go, except that you have got a problem. Your target is Binyamin, and your target is
United.
Is a formidable foe. In the heat of battle, you've got a very vulnerable foe. And your vulnerable foe is Yavesh Gilad. And why didn't Yavesh Gilad come to the call? Why didn't Yavesh Gilad come to heed to come to answer this call? Good question. Glad you asked. One day we'll come back to it. We'll have
they
to deal
with the
right?
Note.
They didn't get the memo. It could be. There's also a familiar connection between Yavesh Gilad and Binyamin. back way back when. Okay, there's a marriage connection between them. So you know what Bnei Yisrael says? Binyamin, watch. You want to see what we can do? I'll show you what we can do. You think you're going to fight with us? Watch this. So-and-so, take 12,000 soldiers and go wipe out Yavesh Gilad. Goes, wipes out Yavesh Gilad, comes back with what? The with 400 daughters of the young girls. Yeah. That's our spoils of war from our destruction of Yavesh Gilad. Binyamin, now look what we can do. You know what happens next? Somebody fires the first shot. Somebody fired the first shot.
Benjamin.
Right. It wasn't Israel that fired the first shot. It was Binyamin. In retaliation for the audacity of the bloodbath of Yavesh Gilad, Binyamin fired the first shot. And it says so. Because after all of these people gathered together, V'yasu b'nei binyamin menarim megivata latzet lemilchama im b'nei Yisrael. V'ish Yisrael itbaktu levad mibinyamin. Right? If you think about the, they gathered their forces together and Binyamin came out to greet them with war. Binyamin came out to war with them not because they want to defend only Yavesh Gilad. Giv'ah. That's a city full of mushchas people. You know, this terrible. What do they need to defend Giv'ah for? But to avenge the blood of Yavesh Gilad? How dare you? How dare you? This war is not about Giv'ah. It's about Yavesh Gilad.
But it started.
And Binyamin started it.
But it started out about Giv'ah.
Correct.
It changed.
It got very complex, very fast. Now, Bnei Yisrael says, wait a second. Let's take a step back. Everybody calm down. Maybe it's time that we should consult the Urim V'Tumim.
After all this,
maybe it's time we consult the Urim V'Tumim.
A little late, don't you think?
A little late. They go to the Urim V'Tumim. What does the Urim V'Tumim say?
Go to war.
Go for it. And who loses?
Israel.
Then they come back to the Urim V'Tumim. And the Urim V'Tumim a second time says,
do it.
Go for it. And you know what happens?
Lose again.
They lose again. And you know why they lost 40,000 soldiers in the first 2 days of battle? Why did the Rabbanu Shalom send them into battle intentionally to destroy them for 40,000 and let Binyamin win for 2 days? To avenge the blood of Yavesh Gilad.
Where is that coming from, though? Where is the source for that interpretation?
This is, as I said to you, the moment I move the story of Yavesh Gilad from Perichav Aleph to Perichav, I now have to reread the Perich. It's the most logic. Now I have to work off logic. Because I have no sources other than my Rebbeim. But now, and I have to work off the assumption that the Urim V'Tumim cannot be wrong. If the Urim V'Tumim sends them into battle and they lose, it's not because the Urim V'Tumim said, oops. There had to be a reason for it. So we went to the Ramban and said, well, the whole war with Binyamin wasn't really justified. But that's not enough to send them into battle and send 40,000 to their deaths. But to avenge the blood of a city that was completely innocent, all they wanted to do was remain neutral. And what did you do? You pounced on them and you destroyed men, women, and child. It was a bloodbath. And now suddenly they come to the Urim V'Tumim and they say, what should we do? And the Urim V'Tumim says, okay, you know what? Okay, day one, 25,000. Day two, another 15,000. 40,000 by the time the story is over. I have no idea how large the city of Yavesh Gilad was. But it wouldn't surprise me if Yavesh Gilad was 40,000 people. And by third day already, they paid the price for their war against Yavesh Gilad. Now, on the third day, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, okay, now let's go back to the story with which we started, which was Giv'ah, and the audacity of Binyamin to defend the people of Giv'ah. Wow. So on the third day, they go to war, and the third day, they're victorious. And the rule in this battle is that the Urim V'Tumim is right all three times. The Urim V'Tumim will send them into battle, and the righteous side will be victorious. The issue is that they're both evil, or they're both equally guilty, because on the one hand they have the evil of Givan, and on the other hand they have the bloodbath of Yavesh Gilad.
Sounds like an eye for an eye, doesn't it?
And if I look at it from that perspective, then suddenly this parak becomes much more complex, but at the same time,
much more understandable.
Now, there are still mysteries we need to resolve. Why Yavesh Gilad didn't come into the play. How Pinchas enters into this conversation. We still haven't resolved the Pinchas equation. Right. So all of that. But B'zrat Hashem. But in the meantime, you have a... Oh, actually, I was going to give you this picture. If you want this, this is what I just did with you now. A summary of chapter 20 with all of the sort of sequence of events together. And I've put next to the psukim the sort of notes from summary of this conversation. The only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the extras because
absentees.